It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but my guest wastes no time reading minds. He's award-winning mentalist Colin Cloud. He's known as the closest thing to real-life Sherlock Holmes, and he's headlining the world premiere of his show, Colin Cloud Mastermind, in Harrah's Cabaret at Harrah's Las Vegas starting July 2nd, then ongoing shows every week, Tuesdays through Saturdays at 6 p.m. For ticket information and everything about Colin Cloud, go to colincloud.com, and you can follow him on Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, and, of course, TikTok. And Colin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much again, good sir. How are you?
Good. I love it. You have a different accent this time.
Yeah, I just like to tweak it every now and again, keep people guessing. It feels like you've got a completely different guest. So, you know, you are most welcome.
Exactly. Well, here's a question I bet you have never been asked. So I want to start off the show with this. What am I not thinking?
Oh, listen, I don't want to get you in trouble, right? So that should probably remain between you and I. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not thinking, so you wouldn't be able to tell me what I'm not thinking because I'm not thinking.
I don't believe that. Yeah, I didn't want to offend and go there and make cheap jokes at your expense, Ira, but yeah,
it's fine. Well, it's a delight seeing you again. I know you had a great run over at the Mirage, and now this whole new show is just yours. You were working with a fabulous magician beforehand, and now you're adding your combination of deduction and mentalism and comedy and an accent. So all those things pile on.
And hairspray. Let's not forget hairspray.
Oh, yes. Hairspray is very important. Not the show, the actual product. That's absolutely correct. Yes.
Absolutely.
So tell us about, we can go into your past in a minute. So people who are listening or watching for the first time may not know your background, but before we even do that, what are the daunting challenges of now you're the headliner, you're the main guy. Shin Lim was the guy you worked with before at the Mirage, and now you're going to be headlining your own show. So do you design it totally differently than what you did at the Mirage?
So, I mean, before I even worked with Shin, before I even got involved with the likes of The Illusionist, the Broadway touring show, I've performed now 10 solo one-man shows at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is the world's largest art performing festival on the planet.
Which is odd since it's a fringe festival.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it's a city that's definitely not designed to hold 4,500 shows a day, right? A day. So like it's madness. But you know, that led to me then taking those shows to the likes of the West End, off to Australia. So I am, you know, I'm very used to doing the shows on my own. And I think I'd gotten really comfortable just with the ability to be in the likes of The Illusionist or work with Shin, where it's an ensemble type cast where you have that flexibility, that a lot more free time, a lot less pressure. But last year, going back to Edinburgh again to run a new show, and just the feeling that I had from doing that again, I realized how much I'd really missed it. And I think that was the final nail in the coffin, as it were, for making my decision as to whether or not to extend with Shin or to go do it alone, essentially. And I think just that feeling that I got reminded of, yeah, it was like, I need to do this for myself now, you know, and the only thing left really on the performing bucket list is to now headline a Las Vegas residency. And it feels like now is the perfect time for a multitude of reasons.
And it's on the Las Vegas Strip, so it's even a better reason to do it.
100%. Like, yeah, just all these things aligning. And, you know, very kindly, the demand for me to do my own show, the interest that had been expressed for, you know, just over a year now, I kind of thought, wow, if these people are all different people coming and asking me to do this, I must be doing something right. I must be ready. I must be, you know, it's a big deal, right? You need to be deserving. You need to earn it. And I feel like, you know, if these people are asking me, then yeah, this must be my time to go put in the effort and really, you know, you need to earn getting it, but I think you need to continue deserving to have it. And I'm very much now ready, I think, as a performer with the perfect show for the, as you said, Las Vegas Strip, to be coming and headlining here every single night.
And Harrah's is centrally located, so that's a plus for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, when we were looking at different rooms, I mean, there are some, Vegas has some stunning showrooms, right? I mean, there are some amazing rooms that I love. But I know from Edinburgh, I basically applied a lot of my Edinburgh festival knowledge. And the number one thing, especially when you're essentially new and starting out again, I mean, I know I've been here for 5 years, but to establish myself on my own, I know that location is key. And if you can imagine like a dartboard, you want to be as close to the bullseye as possible for just people being aware of your show. And I really feel like that sort of Harrah's to Flamingo area really is the sort of Bellagio, Caesars. That area is very much the bullseye of the dartboard of the Las Vegas Strip. So to be in Harrah's, I just think is the perfect room. It's the perfect size for what it is I want to do and share. And yeah, everything is just looking perfect for this.
How many seats is the room?
It's 360.
Perfect. Okay. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I went and tested this show back in February, the first version of what I thought the Vegas show would be. I tested it out in Palm Springs in my friend Jeff Hobson, who's a phenomenal comedy magician, probably the best on the planet, his theater in Palm Springs. And it was 125 seats and both shows were sold out. And it felt really nice to be that intimate with an audience again. You know, the last few years I've been playing stadiums that are 8,000 seats. The Mirage is just over 1,000. And I, you know, the energy you get there is great, but I always feel a little guilty that people leave having watched a magic show, not being a part of a magic show. And I think what I really love trying to create with an audience is a feeling of inclusion and involvement, and that real hands-on tactile aspect of we were part of that show. That show could not have happened without us being there. And I really feel like, you know, with 360 people, it is nearing the limit of what I think that number is to really still have that intimate experience that people leave having been a part of, not just watched or looked mm-hmm. at.
How hard is it to get the elephant on stage in that small of a showroom, though?
Well, that's why we're really having this chat. I was hoping to rope you in to come and usher that on stage every night. So I'm going to take that as a verbal agreement. That's legally
yes,
binding.
Thank you. Absolutely.
See you July 2nd at Harrah's.
So you're calling me an elephant is what you're saying. I see. Okay. It's my weight.
I mean, if you want to,
Colin, it's my weight, right?
The elephant costume on. I support you fully in your decisions.
Give us a sense thematically of what the show's about. Again, for those of you who have not seen Colin perform, it's quite the combination that you bring to the stage. But for listeners and viewers, again, I referenced in the opening about your fascination with Sherlock Holmes, which I think started at age 8, if I remember correctly.
Maybe just a little younger, but certainly around 8 was when I discovered he never existed. When I first flicked through the book, I know, sorry.
Santa Claus, sorry, all right.
But when I was 7, I remember skimming through and by chance opening to the page where he was deducing things about someone and explaining how he did it. And I was like, this guy's fascinating. And of course, the way the book is written through the eyes of Dr. John Watson, I assumed at age 8 that this person was writing about someone real. So I read the book through those eyes. And I remember being 8 years old. I think it was my grandfather who told me that, yeah, he's not real. And, you know, but by then the bug had bitten. And I was, you know, I'm not the kid who was into magic. I never, you know, I don't want to offend anyone, but I never really enjoyed magic as a kid. I enjoyed science. I loved understanding how things worked. I loved taking apart. I remember my parents coming home one day and I'd taken the TV set apart.
Oh, great.
And just to understand how that all worked. And
yeah, you know, did you put it back together again or?
I'm not a magician. I don't do cut and restored, right?
Understood.
It's just take it apart, leave it. That's no.
Yeah. Cut and restore TV. I love that concept.
but yeah, you're less a magician, more a vandal at that point, right? But I loved understanding how things work. Then I discovered hypnosis. There was a performer called Paul McKenna in the UK who has performed some amazing stage hypnosis shows. And the idea of being able to look at someone, click your fingers, say sleep, and they, you know, they drop to the floor. I was like, what is going on here? And understanding then psychology and moving more for understanding how the world works to how people work really fascinated me. I loved learning growing up. I was really, you know, at school, I was never really bullied, but certainly my school, it wasn't cool to be interested in learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was fascinated with all the sciences and got accepted to study forensic investigation at university in Glasgow when I was 15 years old. I didn't start till I was 16. but I started at 16 studying forensics in my last year, specialized in criminal profiling. And that's when I realized the people who are best at observing the world are stand-up comedians, because the number one fear amongst human beings is public speaking. And the fact that they choose to be on stage and just talk to people fascinate. I thought, why would you do that to yourself?
Right.
And then I went to watch a lot of stand-up comedy at the Stand Comedy Club in Glasgow. And I the speed at which these comedians could observe situations, the way that Sherlock would, the way they could hone in, it was incredible. And I thought, I want to learn to do that. And I was a very shy, reserved kid. And I realized the only way to learn it is to get on stage and actually do it. So in my last year at university, I started performing comedy, started mixing in a lot of the hypnosis, discovered mentalism, which is the branch of magic that is more psychological based. So it's not so much sleight of hand as it is more sleight of mind, if you can, you know, imagine it like that. And combining all those things together is what led to me performing my first show in Edinburgh. And it's really snowballed from there.
Yeah, it's an interesting career you've had over the years. And I remember when you came to Las Vegas, and it's such a different environment for you than almost any other place I would think that you performed in. So you had to adapt a little bit, in a sense, to that vibe, the Vegas vibe. And yet at the same time, you're on a stage which to you is familiar territory at this point.
100%. I mean, I was very lucky and fortunate that I'd been able to tour with the Illusionist show for 4 years in America. So I got a great sense of, you know, a broad range of demographics across America, because Vegas really is, you know, it's a real combination of backgrounds, which does make for a much more interesting and exciting show, I feel as well. And it allows me to really, you know, find the characters within the show who are going to be best. Listen, my job as a performer is to make everyone else look good, feel great, and be the stars. No one is designed to be embarrassed, but I want to turn everyone that I engage with into the co-stars of that show. And I think if I've got any real skill, it's in learning how to involve people in a way where if they're reserved, I open them up so that they get to come to life. If they're over the top or drunk, rein them in so that the audience don't get annoyed with them. You know, it's really learning how to conduct the audience so that we have then this experience where the magical things that I'm doing really become more amazing because we get to know those people more. And when you buy into those people, you know, we care more about the overall experience. And that really is where the criminal profiling, believe it or not, comes in. It's really learning how to profile individuals, understand them, and then calibrate my personality to fit them to make sure that they really do shine.
Which is where the skill and talent come in. I know that you spotted me right away and turned me into the police because you had that criminal background that you were able to analyze the fact that I was clearly behind bars.
I mean, I wasn't going to mention that. I was going to hold on to it and blackmail you after this call.
It's but okay. I figure it was easier bringing it out there.
Absolutely.
Have you thought about taking it to the next level, which is ad ventriloquism? So that way you can work with puppets instead of actual human beings. And that way you can read their minds. What do you think about that, Colin?
The one thing I admire about Shin is that a lot of, not all, but a lot of his magic, he doesn't engage anyone and just gets to perform it. And it's always a thing of beauty, because often when you are engaging with people, it can be somewhat stressful. Yes. And I've always been a little envious of his ability to perform. As I mean, he's pioneered this, right? But performing to a camera, he does it so beautifully. And I'm never not going to not be incredibly envious of the ability to just perform what you love without being interrupted, essentially.
When you start the show, do you give a slight disclaimer about the fact that you shouldn't have anything to fear, audience members, if you come up and I work with you, that I won't embarrass you or I won't make you feel bad, that type of thing?
I think it's often better to actually, to give you a peek behind the curtain here, to not tell people that so they are a little on edge. I feel like if you tell people that up top, they relax too much and you open yourself up actually to more situations arising. It's better to lead by example and let the audience see how you treat people. And there's a subconscious understanding on their part that when they see, oh, wait, he knows what he's doing, we're in safe hands here. If anyone does get out of line, they see how I get people back in check quickly. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost training them and conditioning them how to act, behave, and respond as an audience so that the experience... Listen, people are probably only going to see this once. I want to ensure that that experience is the best it could possibly be. That is all I'm trying to do. And everyone is picked at random, but in learning how these people operate, think, and behave, yeah, I really do want to get them into a spot where they're going to perform at their best for the demonstration I'm sharing to thrive, essentially, so that everyone sees the best possible version of that that they can. But yeah, I've just found it, if you tell people up top, hey, listen, I'm not going to embarrass you, et cetera, et cetera, it just makes people go, oh, cool, then we can just, you know, be the naughty kids in class. And it's actually better to not do that right. And just train them as you go.
Should mention again, Colin Cloud, mastermind at Harrah's Cabaret at Harrah's Las Vegas, starting July 2nd, then ongoing shows every week, Tuesdays through Saturdays at 6 p.m. And Colin, the challenge of doing a one-man show, well, it's not really a one-man show, but it's your own show. You're headlining there now. And you've done it before. We talked about it earlier. But you're dealing with people from all over the world, because again, it's Las Vegas. So this must be even more of a challenge in that sense to what you do on stage. You're not dealing just with the local crowd. You're dealing with people from all kinds of countries, some of whom may have language difficulties. So how do you surmount that, as you obviously do?
I mean, I'm Scottish, so I barely speak English, right? So
what'd you say? I didn't understand a word you said.
Don't worry about it. We're going to subtitle this. It's going to be great.
Oh, what great.
A great podcast.
As long as I don't subtitle it in Scottish, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of visual component to what it is I do, and I've learned over the years. You know, I think that the draw to mentalism was the fact. What I didn't like about magic, let me start here, is that often I felt the props the magician would use would act as a barrier between you and the people, and it wouldn't allow you to then fully connect. You know, the magician approaches and they open a deck of cards, they spread them, and right away you're building a wall between you and the person before you really connect with them. What I loved about mentalism is, much like comedy, it's just you and the audience, and there's nothing to hide behind. And I've learned over the years that people do like certain visual things to look at and to involve to make it more interesting. So yeah, I mean, obviously the show is in English. I mean, we've had a lot of people from around the world watching the show at the Mirage. And thankfully, I mean, my Scottish, I mean, joking aside, I hope I've learned over the years how to enunciate in such a manner that our friendly, loving average American will understand clearly what it is I am trying to express. But yeah, I think that I will never forget. I first came to America when I was 21 to perform in LA at the Magic Castle, which is a phenomenal venue. And I remember my first note after show one was, what were you saying? Can you slow down? Can you, you know, I was just, my accent was so strong. And I've had to really learn, even, you know, here when I ask for, if I say, can I get a cup of water, please? People are like, what? And I'm like, water. And they're like, I'm like, sorry, water. And then they're like, oh, you want water? I'm like, that's what I've been saying. You know, so I've learned to. And then it's funny because my Scottish friends and family come and see the show and they're like, what's that voice you're doing up there? So we now call it, my friend David Gerard, my best friend on the planet, he says he's from Pennsylvania, lives in San Francisco. He says my accent is now Scott-ish. Is how he describes it. I think is genius.
Well, if you had kept the original accent that you had, you would be generating anti-Scottish sentiment within the audience because they have no idea what you're talking about and they'll get hostile.
Oh, yeah. Chairs would be thrown, put it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, exactly. Without giving the act away or the performance away, is there one element that is either at the end or somewhere in the show that just takes precedence over other things that you do? And I know that a lot of it is obviously interacting with the audience, so you don't know what the audience is going to say or do, but is there one thing that you feel is the pinnacle or the crown jewel, so to speak, of the act?
It's funny because, you know, like I said, I've done 10 now one-man shows, written are all completely different. So the beauty of writing this was that I got to go back through those 10 shows and pick and choose my favorite moments and routines and demonstrations. So I really feel like this is the best variety of material that I've ever created. It's also been massively punched up because over the years I've learned and improved as a performer. And a lot of it is brand new because of it already being written for my my new Edinburgh show that I'll be doing later this year as well. But what I can say is that the show starts from the minute you buy your ticket to the show. It has already begun for you without you realizing it.
Nice.
When you walk into the room, without giving too much away, some strange things will already be happening when you walk into the room that will be unlike any other show. And I will also say that the show is going to continue long after you leave the room as well.
So what you're saying is you follow the audience home or to their hotel.
I'm a stalker. Yeah, that's what it is.
I got you. Colin Cloud, mastermind stalker. Okay, I got it. That'll work.
Yeah, that's the real genius of the show, is that I get adopted by the audience every night. I can now move in with any of them that I pick and choose.
Don't you think, don't you think, Colin, that part of the fun, and I'm going to use that word, the fun of a show is to really have fun. And a lot of shows are overly produced or too slickly produced, and therefore the fun element is not authentic. Whereas if you have fun with it, including, as you said, before the show, once you buy the ticket, after the show, etc., when you follow them back to their hotel rooms, it's all in fun. And I'm the one behind bars. Okay, fine. But the point is,
we're learning lots about you today, Ira. This is very much an expose of Ira's Centaurus psyche.
Sorry about that. Yes. Well, you mine, and then you called the police. I get it. Listen, I'm out. But don't you think there's an element of that? You can plan it in a sense, but it's still going to just be a fun, not relaxed, but just a natural fun to the show.
Yeah, what I have never enjoyed with a performance is, or watching a performance, is when you've, I mean, aside from like a play where you know that it's scripted, but watching an event where you feel like the person is just pressing play and they're in autopilot, they're not there. I really hope that when I perform, people see and understand and feel that I am truly authentically present with them in that room. And again, because it is, you know, I really am connecting with people, reading people, I need to be alive. And from the minute you walk into the room, you're going to see when you come to the show, I'm already reading you when you walk into the room. And it really relies on me being fully alert, you know. And over the years, you know, it's funny, as a performer, right, there are some days you get on the show, on stage to do the show, and you've just received bad news from back home about a family member who's sick or ill or, you know, something that's upsetting, but you've still got to find it from within yourself to kind of pause on that. And for everything I do, I can't just press play. I really need to be fully attentive. And, you know, it can be tricky, but thankfully I do really love doing this. I really love performing these shows and sharing this experience with people and creating these moments for them that they're never going to get anywhere else. And it really does become reciprocated, where I think I get to the point where I'm never really exhausted when I come off stage. Because once we get that initial spark connecting, you know, me and the audience, it really is reciprocated energy, and it never wears me down. You know, I've really learned how to hold a mirror up to the audience, essentially. And we play, essentially, is, you know, you said the word fun, 100%, but it's like, you get on stage and I want to play. It's as simple as that.
And you get the flow going. Once you're in that flow, it's effortless. I mean, you're working hard and you're concentrating. Before you go on stage, in order to focus, because you do have to focus on people and to be really just targeted into people and what they're thinking, what they're looking like, et cetera, do you do anything to stimulate your brain as opposed to, for example, are there drugs involved, alcohol, women, any of those things? Or do you just immediately just go to the showroom and you're ready to go?
I mean, a large Starbucks Americano with sugar-free vanilla syrup, a lot of ice cubes in it to cool it quickly so I can drink it fast. Again, I don't want to give away a small spoiler of how the show begins, but like I said, there, in a sense, when you come and see it, I am, when you walk into that room, I will already be quote unquote in the zone reading people, and the show will already have, in a sense, started. And I'm already, that is the moment where I am getting into that place mentally to really, really deliver for those people.
You mentioned earlier learning as you went along and how to amp up certain things, et cetera. This combination, and we talked about it earlier, you have comedy in it, you have mentalism in it, you have other elements to it. Do you see that as you continue to develop, you start to add even more elements to your performance? In other words, you're not going to stop and say, okay, I've learned as much as I'm going to learn and that's all, and I'll just stay at this level. I get the sense that you're just always going to keep learning and developing.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because even right now, like, I really don't, people don't know why. I mean, I know why, but I was going to say, people don't know why I'm putting myself through this, in that we're currently doing two shows a day at the Mirage. Right after this call, I go straight to Harrah's. I'm teching from 11 until 4:30. 4:30, I run across the street, do a show at 5 p.m., quick break, show at 7:30, mm-hmm. home, making notes, improving. And on top of all of that, I love taking a step back and looking at my show and going, right. And this is what I did when I started working with Shane. I looked at everything he did perfectly. And I thought, how to best complement that, I need to, from my skill set, tick the boxes that he isn't ticking, which, to his genius and his credit, is why he brought me in, is he knew that I was capable of doing that, you know, which is why in the Mirage show, it is more high energy. It is all comedy. Whereas now in my show, I get moments to where I can pause, breathe, sit down, chat, really share as well my story. But, you know, even the other day, I thought, you know what, I'd really love to do a routine with, I did it in the Mirage for a while, a routine with just kids where, and you, it's funny you mentioned ventriloquism. I did a corporate event with Nina Conti, the phenomenal ventriloquist, at the Venetian a few weeks ago in their showroom. And I thought, you know what? I've always loved ventriloquism. To do a routine where the puppet and the kids engage and something happens, and it makes me go, what could I do with that? And now chances are I never will, right? But I love the creative exercise of going, what have I never done? What is there still to explore? Where can I take this that no one else has? And then what can I do with it at the end that would just be shocking, surprising, new for people? Because that ultimately is what I want to share. I want to really surprise people with what it is I do and give them an event, an experience that they will not get anywhere else.
Yeah, I think that's the unique combination of you and what you do. And as you say, you're always looking around and improving and changing things and finessing things here and finessing things there. And try saying that three times real fast, finesse. But I think that the whole concept, you want people, as you said earlier, you want people to remember their experience with you. They may not see you again ever. Maybe that's their one time in Las Vegas to see you, but they'll remember it. They'll tell friends and family about that experience as well. Before I let you go, what do you think that you want people, in addition to what I just said, which is what you just said, so I'm regurgitating what you said in a less sophisticated way, but what's the second thing you'd like for people to take away from after coming away from your show?
Okay, well, number one, the show is not about trying to convince anyone of anything. You know, I'm not there to try and, there is a fundamental base level where I need to fool you, which is a horrible word, but I need to do things that you don't understand so that you are amazed, astounded, things that you find, I want moments that are hilarious, moments that are emotional, but I really want people to challenge the way that they think and just, you know, fundamentally, yeah, I have a mantra before I start the show and I remind myself, you know what, this could be my last show. For whatever reason, this could be the last time I get to do this. This is also the first time someone in this room is seeing a live magic show. It's also the last time someone's going to experience a magic show. I also remind myself that people are here to escape. Some people have paid a lot of money to be here. Some people got a babysitter. Some people are having a bad day. Ultimately, it's my job to be present, to have fun, and to play. And that is what I remind myself when I get out there. And again, people, as you said there, you touched on it, people will never remember exactly what I did, but they will remember how I made them feel. And I really want to ensure that when they come to Vegas, the entertainment capital of the world, that if they choose to spend not just their money, but their time with me, I want to, like I said earlier, deserve that time. And I want to make sure that it's well spent on their part. And I want to leave them on a high. And I really want them to get themselves to challenge the way that they think. And there are moments that all come together at the end, the crowning jewel, as it were, that you mentioned, where everything in the show comes to a head and you realize that things that you've been perceiving throughout our time together have not quite been exactly as they seemed. And when you learn to flip your reality on certain things, I really think, you know, that sense of being present, of being grateful, and just being able to step back and really appreciate moments, that overarching view of how Sherlock viewed the world, because really, he was the person who was great at being present in the moment, at observing. And as I get older, I'm really trying my best to be much better at that. You know, my years of touring are a blur, but I'm really taking steps to be better at being able to pause, slow down, and really enjoy every single unique event, environment, moment, situation, person that I get to engage. Because as I get older now, sadly, these things go faster. And you know, the one thing I want to make sure is that for myself and for that audience, that they have moments together with themselves, with me, that they, in some capacity, without sounding too cheesy, they get to cherish forever, because they've never had a feeling like that literally anywhere else.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been award-winning medalist Colin Cloud, known as the closest thing to a real-life Sherlock Holmes. He's headlining the world premiere of his show, Colin Cloud Mastermind, in Harrah's Cabaret at Harrah's Las Vegas, starting July 2nd, and then ongoing shows every week, Tuesdays through Saturdays at 6 p.m. And for ticket information and everything about Colin Cloud, go to colincloud.com. You can follow him on Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, and TikTok. And Colin, thanks for coming on the show again.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, everyone, for your time, for listening. It is truly, truly appreciated.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey,